Welcome to Simply Walk the Talk. Our bodies and minds adapt to what we do most of the time. If you want to change your body and mind, you must change what it is you do most of the time. This podcast explores all things health, wellness, fitness, lifestyle, and biohacking. Stay tuned as we explore various thoughts, methods, and experiences from a multitude of conversations between our interesting guests and experts through many fields of work. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Simply walk the talk. Hey everybody, welcome back to another wonderful show of Simply Walk the Talk. I am your host, Joshua J. Holland, and today we're on location here in Budapest, Hungary. We're at the HYD LLC DDW facility. It's a lot of acronyms there, but we're going to be talking about deuterium depleted water, and that's what the DDW stands for. And we're at the facility in which this amazing technology is being harnessed. And so I have with me today,
Gabor
and I, we became familiar. I met him a few weeks back. And when I did the, if you haven't listened to the previous episode in which I spoke about light water DDW with Victor Sagalovsky, at the end of the episode, we discovered that I'm here in Budapest, in which there's a company that is doing some amazing things with deuterium depleted water. And because I'm the kind of person that wants to start something and jump right in head first, I was like, well, I'm going to drive to this facility. So he shared with me the location. The company is Preventa. HYD is the umbrella company that houses all of the research and technologies and all that. But I met with him. I got a chance to sit down with him, and I thought, okay, let me go down the process of actually finding out what they're doing with the DDW. And you know, the fact that I'm here for a few more months, I figured I may as well go through a protocol. And I must say this, Gabor and his team are really trying to do the best they can to find a cure for cancer. And I know that's a very, very tall order. And I know it's a very, very controversial statement to even make, but he has lots of research. His company is doing lots of really, really cool things. So Gabor, welcome to the show.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
Of course. So let's start off with your background. You know, where did you get your start? How did you even get to the point where you're creating million of dollars worth of technology and equipment to create something called DDW?
it started pretty long ago. I was a teenager when I decided to do something with cancer, because one of my neighbors died of cancer, and it was very bad to see how finally staging 1, 2, 3, 4, and finally he died. And I heard that the adults talking about cancer, and I felt that that's something serious, something difficult thing to solve. And at the early 70s, Albert Szentgyörgyi, who is one of the Hungarian Nobel laureate, visited Hungary, and there was an interview with him, and he said one thing: submolecular. He was the scientist who very first said that word, and he was thinking about how the life can be organized, and he supposed that not the big proteins would be responsible for the fast response, for the regulation, but should be something which is much smaller and faster. And he suggested that the negatively charged electron should be that submolecular particle. And I kept it in my mind. And in 1976, May, the idea came to my mind that this small particle can be a positively charged hydrogen ion. Okay, and I started in my mind that the hydrogen ion should be that small particle. And I started my study at the biology faculty in 1977. And 3 years later, another came to my mind that there is a heavy hydrogen. It is called deuterium. And it was roughly 40 years ago, I was sure that the hydrogen deuterium should be responsible for the regulation in the living organism.
Wow.
Then I need 10 more years. I graduated in 1982. Then I got I was a scholarship holder of the Hungarian Academy of Sciences. Then I defended my PhD. I worked in Germany for half years. Then I was invited to the United States for a year. And then I did some DNA work. And when I came back, I quit my job and I started to find a job which is related to cancer research. So in 1990, I started to work in the National Institute of Oncology in Hungary. And the reason I went there, to test whether this deuterium has any role in living organisms or not. And the very first part of my study, I prepared the deuterium depleted water in my garage. I always say, if you want to solve a problem, you need two things. You need a garage and you need an idea. So I prepared the DDW and I tested in a tissue culture. And I saw that the cancer cells couldn't grow when we use the deuterium depleted water to prepare the media. And then the other experiment was we transplanted human breast cancer to mice. And then we replaced one of the group of the mice, the normal water, with deuterium depleted water. And we found that these mice are very happy. The tumor did not develop. So we published my very first paper in 1993 in the FEBS Letters. And that was the very first paper which mentioned that the nature occurring deuterium has essential role in the living organism and in the cell growth. So this is how it started. And to make a drug, it cost about $1.2 billion. So we started to make a drug with $500,000 for it, which is a couple of $1,000s. But we were sure that it's a long trip, but hopefully we will complete the job.
Yes.
And to make some money and to make funding, we came out with products, and that product is a deuterium depleted water, which is on the market since 2000. And that can generate some revenue and that finance the research. And for today, we Hungary, we organized for International Congress on deuterium depletion, and scientists came different parts of the world. And as we could publish more and more paper, more and more scientists recognize the importance of deuterium in the living organism. And we are very happy that over 150 papers has been published, which are related to the deuterium. And of course, the key issue is to register deuterium depleted drugs. And this is one reason that we are here and we set up this facility, because we need a so-called GMP background to have deuterium depleted water for clinical trials. Right. And in that case, we have this facility, so we are ready to produce deuterium depleted water according to the GMP rules. And then we are waiting for investors and we are generating revenue to continue our drug development, to start new clinical trials, and to get an approval that the deuterium depletion should be a very, very effective way to cure and to prevent cancer.
So that it's important. Some of the things you touched on, I want to reiterate, because I think it's fascinating that you had this idea based on a problem that you saw firsthand, which was your neighbor that passed away with cancer, which is a tough thing to deal with. But then to take it upon yourself to try to figure out a solution to that, I think is admirable. And then you went to school and you created in your garage your first deuterium depleted water, which is not an easy feat. I mean, obviously, if you just look at everything that's around us right now, and for the people viewing this on YouTube or any other means, we will take you through the facility today so that you can kind of see all the ins and outs of this. But let's first talk about exactly what deuterium depleted water is. And again, I will let the listener and the viewer know that it's very deep science, but we're going to try to make it as understandable as possible, because even for me, I've had a few conversations. I've known about it for quite some time, but it wasn't until I started to speak with you and a few others that I realized, wow, we really needed to make this more prevalent. We need to make this much more of a bigger conversation. And here I am walking around. I have, if you were in my hotel room, you'd see I have all these empty bottles because I'm trying to keep the bottles and hold on to them. And I've gone through now, this is like my third week of pure deuterium depleted water. So we'll talk about all that. But let's explain to the listener and the viewer exactly what DDW or deuterium is.
Yeah, so deuterium was discovered almost 19 years ago. The point is that the heavy hydrogen mass number is 1. The deuterium mass number is 2. And due to that, there is 100% mass differences between the hydrogen and deuterium. These two hydrogen behave differently in chemical reaction. It is called isotopy effect. So it wasn't discovered by me. Scientists have spent lots of time and they published lots of paper when they used the heavy hydrogen, the deuterium, and it was good to trace biochemical processes. And it was obvious that to split a bond, it's 10 times slower with deuterium than in hydrogen. Mm. And it makes molecules behave completely differently if we replace the hydrogen for deuterium. This is one important...
So just before we go on, I just want to make sure that it's understood. So hydrogen itself has a mass number of 1.
The simple hydrogen, yes.
Simple hydrogen, mass number 1. Yeah. Deuterium, mass number 2.
Yes.
So the mass is twice the mass.
Yes.
Not necessarily twice the size, but twice the mass.
Yeah, it's very important. The size of the hydrogen and deuterium exactly the same because the electron determines the size of the atom.
Yes.
The nucleus, of course, we could say maybe double, but the size of the nucleus is not relevant, I guess, in that case. Due to the 100% mass difference, the key issue that the vibrational frequency is very different of the hydrogen comparing to deuterium. And this is the reason that the two hydrogen behaves differently in chemical reaction. So this is a key issue. The other very important key issue is that if we check the ratio between the hydrogen in deuterium in nature, it's about 6,600:1. And I guess that was the reason that for 60 years, nobody addressed whether this deuterium has any role in living or has not. Why should we take care of deuterium if only 6,600 is deuterium? But if we check the deuterium concentration in millimole, what we see in the blood test, so the calcium concentration in our body, in our blood, is about 2.5 millimole.
Millimole?
Millimole per liter.
Mm-hmm.
The magnesium is about 1 millimole. But the deuterium is 12 millimole. So we ignored a heavy hydrogen, which concentration is pretty relevant because 6 times higher than calcium. And why was it ignored? So that was the question what I addressed. And to get the answer, whether deuterium has any role or not, very simple. Remove the deuterium. If you see that the lives do everything in a different way in a deuterium depleted media, you can suppose that the deuterium has a very important role. So this is what I did. What I mentioned in the tissue culture and in replacing the drinking water, the mice, with deuterium depleted water. So it was obvious that the cells know and recognize that the lack of the deuterium. And the good point is that the cancer cells are very sensitive for the low D level, and even they are very sensitive for the lowering D concentration. And this is the reason that we can targeting the cancer cells because the healthy cells, because they are healthy, can adapt to the lowering D concentration. So their metabolism is ready to organize and make everything according to the lower D concentration. But this is what the cancer cells cannot do it, or it takes much longer time for cancer cells to adapt the whole metabolism.
Okay. All right, I think I'm with you. So, you know, what some of the things that are being pointed out so far, and again, correct me if I'm wrong in my understanding of what you're saying, but everything starts from the submolecular level, right? So we're the submolecular level is sort of what got your start. And you heard this phrase from a doctor, you know, a scientist many years ago, and you started to think on this submolecular level. And essentially, the cells is what functions. It helps to create this amazing function throughout the body. If our cells don't function, we don't function, right? Yeah. So if we want to optimize cellular function, we need to optimize all of the processes that go into making the cells work. And one of those things that slows down the function of the cells, it sounds like, is deuterium. Because maybe it requires more energy to split the bonds. No? Yes?
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. I'm just trying to kind of understand it so that we can maybe dive in a little deeper. Okay, but just to make it more clear.
Okay. So the key issue, if you really look at only one single cell, mm-hmm. one single cell size is about 40 micrometer, which is pretty small. And within each cell, we have a nucleus, which contains the DNA. And the length of the DNA is 1.8 meter length. So it's huge. Can you imagine? Yeah. Like me. And it is packaged in a single cell in the nucleus of one single cell. That DNA code about 25,000 proteins. In one single cell, there are about 2,000 different biochemical processes, and they are working properly. The question, how can the cells harmonize all this process? And we are talking about molecular biology, and we are very happy to know lots of about the molecules, the gene expression, the proteins, the structure of the proteins. The pharma industry is going to find the new molecules, which hopefully will inhibit one proteins and hoping that can cure cancer. But the key issue is how can be organized and well organized one single cell. And this is not harmonized on a molecular level. This is harmonized on a submolecular level. And the deuterium hydrogen ratio would be a key signal for the cell what to do and what not to do. Because when the cell can modify the deuterium hydrogen ratio, that will send a signal to all the molecules in the cell. Because if we reduce the deconcentration, then in the proteins and other molecules, will be a new equilibrium with a lower D level. And this is how it works. In a living organism, in the cell, there are two mechanisms which can modify the deuterium hydrogen ratio. One is in the membrane. Mm-hmm. So, for example, when a growth hormone binds to the membrane, that will stimulate the so-called sodium hydrogen antiport, which means the cells take up one sodium and throw out one hydrogen. And that will cause a change in the pH. Mm-hmm. And when this process is activated and that process prefers the hydrogen, that means the deuterium hydrogen will increase in the cell. So when the growth hormone binds to the membrane, that finally leads to the higher deuterium hydrogen ratio because the membrane process always will discriminate. Okay, you are deuterium, I keep you inside. You are hydrogen, okay, I throw it out. And that is one of the signals for the cell which can trigger the cell multiplication, okay? And one of the reasons that the cells and cancer cells are cancer cells because they very easily can lift up the deuterium hydrogen to the threshold. And this is the reason that they are multiplying, and the cancer grows. Mm. Okay, but there is another system. There is a brake system. Because as Sanyurji said that you cannot regulate the traffic with one light. You need a red light and you need a green light. So the green light in a living organism is the mitochondria. Because in our body, we every day synthesize about 0.3 liter deuterium depleted metabolic water. It means when we eat the food and we burn the food to carbon dioxide, what we exhale, and carbon dioxide and metabolic water. That metabolic water is deuterium depleted, but depending on what you eat. the more carbohydrate you eat, the level will be closer to the natural lutein concentration. The more fat you eat, the lower will be the deconcentration of the metabolic water. So in the healthy cells, there are two processes at the same time. The membrane is able and going to able the DH ratio. The mitochondria is producing lutein depleted water, so they can keep low, on a low level, the deconcentration. And in the healthy cells, they are imbalanced and they are very happy. But when there, we know that there is one common feature in all cancer cells, the damaged mitochondria. So finally, no break in the cancer cells. The cancer cells are not to be able to produce lutein depleted metabolic water. So the cancer cells very easily can lift up the DH ratio to the threshold. This is the reason they grow. So when we replace the water of the mice, or we have sold millions of liter of water for humans, and they were consuming, and we followed thousands of cancer patients who were consuming lutein depleted water, and we see the data, we can say we can get a 3 to 10-fold increase in median survival time. Because if a cancer patient consuming lutein depleted water, we are reducing day by day the D level in the body. So even if a cancer cell is going to lift up the DH ratio, and they should do it because the mitochondria is damaged, but when a cancer patient consumes lutein depleted water, we can mimic as if the mitochondria would work properly. So we can push the brake, and the cancer cell should handle that situation. And if we are dosing on a well way, then that way we can cure cancer.
I love it. Okay. All right. So I'm following you even more. And I imagine the listener and the viewer is probably having a difficult time really understanding this. But one of the things I like to try to do as a host of the show is put myself in the shoes or the seat of the listener or the viewer. And one of the ways to do that is to play devil's advocate and say, okay, why should I continue listening to this guy talk about mitochondria and cells and submolecular levels and all these things? And I don't have cancer, so why should I even care about continuing to understand what this means? Is there an answer or a statement to address the person who feels like they're absolutely healthy, but maybe want to maintain their health or improve their health a bit, and they're not really concerned about cancer? What would your response be to that?
The first question we should address, why do we have so much cancer patients? Why do we have so many diabetic patients? And why is it? Because 200 years ago, the people were much healthier. I guess one thing is, what is the average deconcentration during our lifetime? If we go back to it 60 years, when the people ate much more fat, then it means that the deconcentration of the metabolic water, which is the final results of the carbohydrate intake and fat intake, that was much lower than what is today. It means we are educated that don't eat fat because it's bad, and take 60% of the calorie intake with carbohydrate. When we went to the shop and bought different food, and I asked the scientists, take out the water from the food and burn the dry food to water and tell me what is the deuterium concentration of the different food. And we found that the carbohydrate give us 150 ppm, which is a normal deconcentration. But when we checked the fat, it was 118 ppm.
Which was
118, which is the deuterium depleted. So when we are eating food, preferring the carbohydrate, or metabolic water deconcentration will be very close to 150. This is one thing. We should reduce our average deconcentration with 10-15 ppm. And one way to do that, to change the diet, I don't say be ketogenic or go directly, but change the ratio of the fat and the carbohydrate. This is one thing. The other thing, consume lutein depleted water. And I would recommend to do it in two ways. to reuse for your rest of the life with 10-15 ppm, you can consume maybe a couple of glasses of water with 105 ppm or 125 ppm. That would reduce the average and you are fine. But we also recommend for 3-4 months, consume exclusively deuterium depleted water, because that will cause a significant decrease in the deconcentration, and that will challenge all the cells in the living organism, and hopefully the cancer cell will not tolerate that changes. Mm-hmm. And that way, all the small group of cells can be killed. You should think about that when the size of the tumor is 1 millimeter, when they reach that size, then they stop growing, because the cells within the 1 millimeter cannot get the food with diffusion. So they slow down. And that time, that small group of cells start to sending signaling that the vessel should grow into the tumor. And when they can solve that problem, then the tumor will grow. So in everybody has small group of cancer cells which are ready to grow. But when we make a short cure with a lowering deconcentration, we can eliminate that. And we have a very solid data. We followed 204 cancer patients who had cancer. They were operated. They received the conventional therapy and they were tumor-free.
Morphine?
Tumor-free. They were tumor-free. So Everybody was healthy because couldn't detect tumor with MRI, CT, and whatever.
Okay.
So the question is, when a patient became tumor-free, whether the...
Tumor-free. I thought morphine. I'm like, wait, morphine? That means tumor, they're healthy?
Tumor-free,
yes. Okay, yeah.
So the question when used to cancer patients is in remission, whether they relapse or not. And depending on the tumor type, the relapse rate can be pretty high or can be pretty low. Mm-hmm. So in our database, these 204 cancer patients started to consume deuterium depleted water despite they were tumor-free, because nobody could find the tumor inside in these patients. And the cumulative follow-up time of these 204 patients was 1,024 years. It means the average was 5 years. We could follow everybody. And we lost 11 patients out of the 1,024 years. 8 out of 11 was lost a couple of years after they stopped drinking deuterium depleted water. So the example says that typically we could say that 30-40% of these 204 patients should have relapsed, but they didn't, because they repeated the cure. They regularly consumed deuterium depleted water. And that should be an evidence that if a healthy population who never was diagnosed with cancer would consume regularly deuterium depleted water, that should be able to reduce the incidence of cancer.
Okay, I love it. This is very fascinating. And in fact, I talked about this product called Lumen, which is this breath analyzer that measures the CO2 upon exhale and measures oxygen upon inhale. And that's what I was reminded of when you started to talk about the, you know, when we consume carbohydrates on a big level, we're going to be closer to 150 ppm measured within our body of deuterium. And then when you consume a cleaner fuel source like a fat, possibly even protein, I would assume that it's a little bit lower. Which is one way, like you mentioned, to sort of help your body maintain or mitigate the effects of deuterium. You could also pair that up with drinking deuterium depleted water, which is what I've been doing. And for the people that are very serious in health challenges, they should really consider going to this lower ppm. So let's talk about that, because right now I'm drinking the 125 ppm, and I know I also purchased the 105 ppm, just because I wanted to maybe see if there was a difference in taste or a difference in effect or whatever. Mm-hmm. I also thought it was really cool when I went to your shop that you have the carbonated version, yes, which I'm a very big fan of carbonated beverages. So the blue cap is carbonated, 125, and then you've got the white cap, which is still water. Yeah. I will say this before we talk about the ppm. This tastes like regular water. It's not any different, you know. The taste is the same unless you go still versus sparkling. And I imagine that's probably the trickiest part into convincing people that there is something behind this, which is why we're doing this right now, because, you know, you wouldn't be investing in all of this equipment, I don't think, to just create bottled water, right? So the science behind this is very, very important and powerful, which is why we discussed what is DDW. But now let's talk about the different levels of ppm.
Yeah. So the ppm means if you take 1 million water molecules, how many is heavy water? So in we can say in the globe, in the ocean, at the equator area is 155 ppm, the deuterium concentration. When the clouds are moving to the poles,
the clouds,
mm-hmm, they losing the heavy hydrogen, the heavy water. So in North Europe and at South America, the deconcentration of the rainwater is pretty low. It's lower, 140, 142 ppm. When the lowest deconcentration on the Earth should be about 130, 125 maybe. So when we produce our products and the number of the products means how many heavy water is out of 1 million water molecules. So 125, 105, 85, 65, 45, and 25, this is the lowest deconcentration we were able even to produce here.
Which is the lowest?
25 ppm.
25 ppm. And ppm is parts per million.
Yes.
Parts per million, yeah.
And during the last, I could say, 30 years, I was following cancer patients who are consuming deuterium depleted water, and I was chatting with them, talking with them. The key issue was, what is the best way? How should we dose? What type of deconcentration they should consume, depending on staging, the type of cancer, the type of commercial therapy. And first I summarized my knowledge in 2000, and my very first book was published at that time. And now, after 20 years, I wrote another book, and the aim is to share all the knowledge with the people who can be interested or who are suffering from cancer, and even the oncologist, to what would be the best way to integrate deuterium depletion to the commercial therapy. Because we can see very, very good synergistic effect between the deuterium depletion and the radiotherapy. It's recommended to consume deuterium depleted water before the surgery. Mm-hmm. And so it's quite a big knowledge, I guess, and it should be very important to listen and to learn it and to use it. So this is what we can, and of course we believe that the only way that everybody can get access to the deuterium depleted water and drugs with deuterium depleted one when we register it as an anti-cancer drug, and this is the only way that can be part of the oncotherapy, and this is the only way that everybody can use up and can be treated with deuterium depletion, with deuterium depleted drugs.
So then what would be a protocol for someone that, you know, like myself, like that's just kind of wants to optimize their health as best as possible? You know, you've got the options of 125 ppm, 105 ppm, I think 85, what is it after that?
40, 60, 64, 65, 45, 25.
Yeah. So it goes all the way down from 125 to 25 ppm. You got all these options from still water to carbonated water, right?
So
it's like a kid in a candy store, especially for me. When I first came to your shop, I'm like, I want one of everything, you know. So, but what would you suggest?
So for healthy people, we recommend to consume 125 or 105. We do not recommend to consume 85 or even lower, because I don't believe, and the data doesn't show, that the lower, the better. what I say that the optimum level of the deconcentration of the, for the mitochondria and for the cell, it should be about 100, 130, 125, 135 ppm. But we can get consuming 105 or 125 ppm water. So this is what we recommend people to reduce the average deconcentration of the body just to become healthy, because we had made a study with athletes. They consume 105 ppm, and after the loading test, we found that the lactic acid appeared that much later, so the mitochondria work much more properly in a lower deconcentration. So this is one thing. Of course, if someone has a disease, that we can talk about two big categories, cancer and metabolic disease. For cancer patients, we typically recommend 105 ppm for a couple of months, and then change for 85, change for 65, and go down. Because when someone consuming one type of water one to three months, after 3 months, will not be any changes in the deconcentration, because we'll be in equilibrium in the body. And then the cells, cancer cells, even the cancer cells, are very happy. Okay, I have arranged everything, adjusted everything to the lower deconcentration, so I can start again, to grow again. And this is the reason we recommend, again, reduced the D level of the water intake. So, and that should be combining with the conventional therapy and with a lot of things what we have figured out that should be the best way. And we haven't talked about the metabolic disease. So I was surprised when a cancer patient with diabetes came back and said, okay, my blood sugar went down. And I was surprised, because that wasn't the reason to work with lutein depletion to find something for metabolic disease. But then we made a couple of rat study at the university, and just the paper will appear, hopefully in a couple of weeks, we published, that we checked the rats, we made them diabetic, and we checked whether the deconcentration, a low deconcentration, can reduce the blood sugar level, and we could. Hmm. So it was obvious that the blood, and the good point is that we also could prove what is the mechanism, how the lower deconcentration can reduce the blood sugar level of the rat. Because
What was? I'm sorry?
What is the mechanism? How can we reduce the blood sugar level of the rat? Okay. It is well known that there is a protein called GLUT4. Mm-hmm. That protein responsible to take up the glucose from the blood. That GLUT4 protein is staying in the cytosol, within the cell. And when an insulin binds to the insulin receptor, that trigger a signal pathway, and that will trigger the GLUT4 translocation from the cytosol to the membrane. And then the GLUT4 take up the glucose from the blood. Okay, so we checked what is the GLUT4 concentration in the rat muscle membrane. And we found that the lower deconcentration stimulated the GLUT4 translocation from the cytosol to the membrane. So that is how it works.
Wow. So it increased the ability of GLUT4?
Yes.
The signal?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. We ran a phase 2 clinical study with diabetic patients, and we could prove we could reduce the fasting glucose level. And 30% of the population in the patients, we reduce the insulin resistance, which makes clear that the lutein depletion is not an anti-cancer drug. The lutein depletion is a way to intervene into that submolecular regulatory system.
Yeah. It's starting to make clearer sense, because there's all this talk about, you know, is it deuterium depleted water that is the drug or the cure, or is it the fact that you can allow the cells and all the processes within that cell to optimize functionally, right? To functionally optimize or be optimized. That's what is the cure here, right? When you can allow your body to do what it was designed to do when it was designed, then chances are you shouldn't have cancer. Chances are, but of course, I would assume that you're not saying drink this water and everything is fine. You've got to also do everything else, eat a better diet. So this leads me to another question, which is, Why do you think there's more prevalence of deuterium in our environment today? Like, what, with all the research you've done, what have you figured out? Why, let's say, thousands of years ago, the deuterium levels were much lower, apparently, but now they're much higher. Where does this come from?
There was some fluctuation of the deconcentration on the Earth. It depends on the ice age. The deconcentration could be different than today's. But I don't believe that in the last 10,000 years, the deuterium level would have changed significantly. But depending on where you live, you will drink different deconcentration. So people in the Caucasian, they live very long and they are healthy. That water is much lower than in Hungary and several parts of the world. So that may influence maybe the healthy and the aging or this thing. But there is one key issue also that we always talk about, that the mutation is responsible for cancer, which is true. So as we are getting older, more and more mutation is accumulating in our genetic program. And there are hundreds of evidence that a given mutation really can cause and can connect it with the cancer. So this is the reason I asked the scientist in Hungary in a biology research center to check whether deuterium depletion can modify the mutation rate. And we published a paper in a PLOS-1. We checked the Escherichia coli, and we checked whether the 2 ppm, keeping these bacteria in a 2 ppm deconcentration, reduced the mutation rate. And we could find that 9 out of 15 experiments significantly were able to reduce the mutation rate in a low deconcentration. So
that's very, very low concentration, right?
Very, very low. And it's very low, and it's very, very difficult to prove that small changes, but lowering deconcentration can modify and change the mutation rate. And we do not say that where there is a deuterium in the DNA that will cause mutation, but we concluded that it has a probabilistic effect on the mutation. So it can modify whether will be a mutation or not. Because when one of our cells is doubling, before doubling the cells, they have to copy the DNA, which is 3,200,000,000 base pair. So and they sometimes make a mistake. And then depending on how frequently can copy the DNA and not on the right way, it means in the daughter cells will be some differences comparing to the mother cells. And it's an issue whether that chance to have another base pairing is high or low. And if you very small amount, you can reduce it, that can be very important on our 60, 78 years of our lifetime.
Of course, yeah. Okay. Interesting. Well, it's easy for me to understand this because I've had an opportunity to speak with you a lot. I even recall you were drawing cells and atoms and nucleuses on a piece of paper for me, and you were really trying to help me to understand it. And unfortunately, our viewers and our listeners don't get an opportunity to have that. But I think you've done a really good job in explaining the importance, especially in cancer research. But I would also suggest for people to take note into the metabolic processes, right? Like the metabolic health or lack thereof, because this is, especially in America, we have metabolic disease is rampant. And, my family, especially like my dad, is going through some situations right now. I mean, he's been morbidly obese for most of my adult life. And this is something I'm trying to encourage him to get involved in. But first thing that comes up is, boy, that's just a bottle of water. I'm not spending $4 for a bottle of water when I can go get it for 50 cents or a dollar at the store. And it's hard to get people that are mentally in this situation where they feel like they're addicted, or I would say addicted is probably the right word, but they're addicted to the food and they're addicted to their health status. So it's very hard to create those changes. What would you say to someone in a situation like this to hopefully encourage them to just look a little bit deeper?
I would say check the internet. So of course, there are lots of bullshit, but there are lots of real scientific and well-established thing on the internet. For today, the science, I guess, proved that the deuterium is very important in living organisms. Everybody can read about, everybody can check it out, and they can decide whether use up the knowledge or they ignore it. It's up to them.
I know you shared some very, very important research with me. So I want to, if it's okay with you, I want to share this, at least some of it in the show notes, and especially some of the research that we talked about today. I can share it in the description and also in the show notes so people can kind of take it upon themselves to look at this research because it is very important. I would also encourage people to just maybe find out because it's becoming more ubiquitous around the world, right?
Yeah.
Just do a search for it. Where can I find deuterium depleted water? If you don't know how to spell it, just copy and paste on the links here, okay? But before we start to wrap up, I would like to give you an opportunity to maybe explain something that maybe you don't get an opportunity to talk to people about. You've got a platform now, a platform that's mostly American platform. What, if anything, do you wish to kind of say to our audience or to me or to the listener?
Yeah, we are working hard to accomplish that issue. So our main limiting factor from the beginning is always the funding was. So we are not comparable with a big pharma or a small pharma. And it was very, very difficult, of course, to convince the scientific community. But I know that this is the way, so I'm not complaining that it wasn't recognized 30 years ago, my very first paper. It takes time to convince the world that this is the direction we should move forward. And as I see that more and more people is coming and joining and supporting that, sooner or later, that one day, overnight, will be accepted. And I'm waiting for that. I don't know how long you have to wait, but we are working every day. We are working very hard. So I don't worry. So nobody can put it back.
Unlearn this, right?
No, you can't unknow this, right?
Exactly.
This is the key. So, okay.
There's two questions I usually ask every guest that I bring onto the show. Pretty easy, much less scientific than what we've been talking about right now. But the first question that I ask every guest that I bring onto the show is, what is your top two pet peeves? What are two things that just kind of gets under your skin that just annoys you? And it doesn't have to be about DDW or anything about water or any of your research. It can just be anything. And the reason why I like to ask these questions is because it's a really fun opportunity to get to know you a little bit better. So for instance, one of my pet peeves is when you're on an escalator, you know, you're going up an escalator in the mall or in a shopping center, and clearly there's enough space for, you know, two people to go up. And then there's two people just sitting there or standing there and blocking the one way, and you see a bunch of people wanting to go up on one side. This is a pet peeve of mine. Okay, what are your top two pet peeves?
I guess we should look around and on the world and seeing what we have done in the last 100 years, and very, very fast we should change a lot of things. If we don't do that, it doesn't count whether we can save the life of 9 million cancer patients. Because we are facing with much, much, much more serious problems in the future, or it is already existing. Everybody talking about that climate change, science has told 40 years ago that will cause a trouble. And we are still pushing the gas pedal, not pushing the brake. So this is a main issue. If we are not able to solve the big problem, it doesn't count if we solve the small problems.
Well said. Do you have another one that comes to mind? Another pet peeve?
Oh, that's enough.
That's enough? Yeah, okay. We don't want to get you going to get you too rattled for the rest of your workday. Okay, and then the last question I ask is a much more beautiful question, and I like to finish on a more positive note. And so I would like to ask you, what is something you're most grateful for? What gives you this essence of gratitude?
It should be, of course, a lot of things. I presume. But so I think everybody should, during their life, to do something which is very useful for not only for himself but for everybody, and to spend our lifetime that should be good and should be helpful, and it goes some progress. And in that case, I guess I'm 65 years old, so I try to use out that first 65 years, or putting everything what I could do. And I was very young when I started to work, and I didn't suffering working it. I enjoyed it, and I still enjoy it, and trying to do everything what I could do in the rest of my life.
Beautiful. Okay. All right. Well, I want to thank you for your time. Thank you for bringing us to your facility. Thank you for all your research and for all the things that you've put out there. And hopefully more and more people start to see this research. And hopefully there's some people listening that could help out with some funding issues and things like that. And I think once we wrap this up, we're going to go and kind of tour the facility. So it'll be cool to see how all of these machines, how they work, or at least how they're housed, and you can explain to us how it works. But if you could, let people know the best place to find out more information about you, your company, HYD, Preventa, all of that. What's the best place to find you?
So one of the research is they can find it on hyd.hu website.
hyd.hu.
And they can visit the ResearchGate website where all the scientific papers has been put on. So, and again, they can find lots of presentations. The www.deutindepletion.com contains, we recorded all the presentations of the 4 International Congress on deutin depletion. Mm-hmm. They can watch it and they can follow it. So I guess everybody get access to the knowledge what's going on with deutin depletion.
Perfect. Perfect. So I'll list all of that information. And again, I'll put your full name without trying to butcher the last name. I'll write it there so people can kind of search for you. And I would assume you guys are on social media. And I know you're on Facebook.
Our product, the Preventa, has Facebook, and our anti-cancer drug for veterinary use has a Facebook.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Great. All right. Well, thanks for hanging in there. I know it was a long, grueling science lesson about hydrogen and deuterium and all kinds of fun stuff. But thank you for your time as always. And if you have any questions or concerns, feel free to write me a comment. Don't forget to subscribe. And also, please feel free to share. Once again, this is Josh. Peace.
Walk the talk, talking facts. Move like me, but I move a little fast. Make my move, here to last. Fasten these seatbelts, I'm coming past. Take care of me, longevity. Hack my biology, better believe. Walking the talk, soul, mind, and body connected. Better come give us a listen. Better come give us a minute or two. Open the box up, we giving you tools. Giving your engine the fuel that it needs. Breathing into it, it's autoimmune. Make a connection, we're stronger in two. Making us one of a kind of a few. Work on the mind, but show me your moves. If you do what you say, you know what to do. Yeah.
Simply walk the talk.